Today's story of the Mahabharata, The Curse of King Pandu. When the Princess Kunti was a young girl, she was given a benediction by the sage Durvasa. Whichever demigod from the heavenly world she would call would come to her immediately. During her youth, she tested the mantra to invoke the demigod by summoning Surya, the sun god. By him she bore a child, which was hidden from common knowledge, and by his mystic powers she remained a maiden. Several years passed. The young Kunti was now old enough to be married. She chose the handsome, powerful son of the Kuru house, Pandu, as her husband. Madri, the princess of the Madra kingdom, was the other woman who chose Pandu for her lord. Bhishma made arrangements for the two weddings to take place in a manner suited to their rank and race. It was the golden age of the Kuru house. Pandu was a good soldier. He went on tour of the land of Greater India, intent on subjugating all the kings. He conquered the Dasanas, Kasi, Anga, Vanga, and Kalinga. He descended on the kingdom of Magadha. He was able to defeat that king easily. Since the time when the kings Chitranga and Vichitravirya died without leaving any heirs, Bhishma had the kingdom to manage, and all the three small children too. These smaller kingdoms then thought that the glory of the Kuru house was on the wane. Hence this campaign of Pandu was effective in more ways than one. It re-established the supremacy of the Kuru house. It won fame for Pandu. He was claimed to be the best soldier of his times. After the campaign was over, Pandu, with his two queens, went to the forest for relaxation. He was a great hunter also. On the southern slopes of the snowy Himalayas, he spent many happy days with his two young wives. The dwellers in his forests mistook them for demigods who had come down to earth for amusement. It was a happy time for them. In after years, it was the memory of these days filled with pleasure that kept Kunti alive. In that forest lived a rishi and his wife. The two were intensely in love with each other. The sage wanted to enjoy the pleasures of love without any restraint. Since only animals are able to love without any thought of the openness of it, the rishi and his wife changed themselves into deer. They were always together. One day, when they were lost to everything in the pleasure of coming together, Pandu saw them. They were excellent targets. The hunter in him made him forget that the law is that no two animals which are together, embracing in love, should be disturbed. He took his bow and arrow and aimed at the couple. In a moment, the male deer fell to the ground, hurt fatally. It addressed the king in a human voice and said,
"Born in a family known the world over for its righteousness, how could you have done this simple thing? You saw that we were lost in the embrace of love. How could you have the heart to disturb us? I am a sage and this is my wife. We were so happy together. In later years, this heinous action of yours will cost you your life. When, overcome with love, you approach your wife, death will strike you even as it has done to
All the pleadings of Pandu were to no avail. The angry sage would not relent, and there was no hope of escaping the fate that awaited him. And the rishi died, and his wife too, along with him. With a heavy heart, the poor unfortunate prince wended his way to the ashram, chiding himself for his thoughtlessness. Fate's ways are indeed mysterious. At a touch, it changes the entire future of a man. Hondu was the happiest of men, with nothing to worry him. He was the uncrowned king of the entire kingdom of the Kurus. At the peak of his glory, he was laid low, like a green tree struck down by lightning. Pandu then lost all interest in everything. He did not wish to return to his kingdom. He told his wives that he had made up his mind to spend the rest of his life in the forest. Knowing the reason behind this decision and the cause of the king's despondency, they did not speak a word. The fire of self-reproach had burnt Pandu free of all worldly aspirations. He wanted nothing other than peace. Peace which could be attained only by living as the rishis did. He made up his mind that the next conquest would be over the self. This would be his greatest conquest. He set a law unto himself, saying,
"From now onwards I will be a different man. Neither pleasure nor sorrow will hurt me. Praise and blame I will treat with equal indifference. The opposites will find me unaffected by them. I will not love this life of mine, nor will I hate it. I will do penance, not by sitting under the tree with my eyes closed, but by mentally renouncing all worldly things."
He collected all his retinue round him. Giving away all his belongings to them, he said,
"Please go back to Hastinapur, and saluting my dear mother Ambalika, and my grandmother Satyavati, and my respected uncle Bhishma, tell them about the course of life I have planned out for myself. I have no intention of ever going back to that city."
Kunti and Madri discarded their jewels and costly silks and gave them all to the departing messengers. Hearing about the renunciation of Pandu, the city of Hastinapur was sunken in woe. Bhishma was very much aggrieved at the unfortunate happenings. As for Ambalika, her eyes rained tears incessantly. It was not possible for anyone to console her. Bhishma felt that the burden was once again placed on his shoulders. With the powerful Pandu as the commander and ruler of the kingdom, and with the wise and gentle Vidura as the mentor of the blind King Dhritarashtra, Bhishma thought that the weight of the kingdom had been lifted off his shoulders, but now it was evident that his short respite was over. He had to rule the kingdom again, and he knew not for how long. The ice which had entered his heart on that unforgettable day when he renounced the world and the joys of the world for the sake of his father hardened further. Bhishma felt that he was impervious to all hurts. Pandu spent several years in the forest. He was happy in his own way, since he had renounced all things that threatened to cause unhappiness. However, as time passed, a new worry entered his heart. He wanted children. He heard that a man with no sons was doomed to hell. His worry was immense. One day he was talking about it to his wife Kunti. He could not take her, that was certain. So he asked her if she would, for the sake of his salvation, produce a child for him with a sage for companion, as his mother had done. Kunti would not agree to it. In fact, she was angry with him, and she said,
"My lord, you are my lord and master. I chose you as my husband long ago. I will be with you in heaven or in hell. When you die, I will die with you, and after death this curse cannot hold. We will get children then. Please do not try to coax me to do something which I cannot bring myself to do."
Pandu could not rest in peace. Days and nights he spent in misery, thinking only of his unborn children. Finally, taking pity on the king whom she loved immensely, Kunti said,
"My lord, I can cure you of your depression. I have it in my power to do what your heart desires."
She told the king of her girlhood days, of the visits of Durvas Muni to her father's court, and of the boon granted by Durvas. The king's joy was immense, and he talked it over with her, and he decided that a son should be born of Dharma, which indeed would be a worthy son.
He will be a son who will be remembered in after times, the personification of righteousness himself. My son will uphold my name for all times.
In that picturesque forest garden of Satashringa, Kunti invoked the Lord of Dharma. On an auspicious day when all the stars and planets were favorable, she gave birth to the Son of Dharma. A voice from the heavens proclaimed that this child was the perfect image of righteousness, and for this quality in him, he would be famed throughout the world. The child was named Yudhisthir. Pandu was very happy. A year later, he asked Kunti to bear him another son. This time he wanted the father to be Vayu, the most powerful of the demigods.
When righteousness is supported by strength, nothing can withstand the combination.
And so Vayu, the demigod of the wind, was invoked, and a strong, beautiful son was born to Kunti. And the voice from the heavens now proclaimed,
"This child will be the most powerful and the most affectionate child."
And that son was called Bhima Sen. Pandu, now the father of two sons, was not satisfied. He asked Kunti to give him another son.
"Summon Indra. A son born of the Lord of the Heavens will indeed be the realization of all my dreams. A son born of Indra will be very righteous. He will be a great man. He will be a hero, invincible. You will be the mother of the greatest of all heroes."
And Kunti invoked Indra, and he gave her a son, and the voice from the heaven proclaimed,
"This child will win for Pandu imperishable fame. He will be the conqueror of the entire world. There will be no one like him."
Indra came to Pandu and said,
"This son of yours will be the conqueror of the entire world. Your son Yudhisthir will perform the great Rajasuya and Ashwamedha sacrifices with this son of mine by his side. My son is the other half of Vishnu. He is Nara. Krishna, the son of Vasudeva and Devaki, is Narayan. Because of these two men, the earth will be cleansed of all the poisons which are hurting her."
And with these words, Indra went away, and this son was called Arjun. There is an avarice which is greater than love of money. It is the desire for sons. Pandu was the father of three sons, and still he was not satisfied. He asked Kunti to give him another son, but she refused, saying,
"You were so eager to have sons that I agreed. Now, even after three sons have been born, if I get more, religion will be destroyed. Desperate acts are allowed only three times at the most. I will not try again."
And Pandu told her,
"Yes, I think you're right. But now let's think of Madri, your co-wife. She has no son at all, while you have three. Can you not teach her the incantation and help her to get a son?"
Kunti was quite willing to do it, and she taught the invocation to Madri. And Madri invoked the Ashvini Kumaras, the heavenly twins. They gave her two sons. These sons of Madri were more beautiful than the other three, and the voice from the heavens spoke once more,
"These two will be the most handsome men in the world. They will be famed for their good qualities, their devotion, their bravery, and their wisdom."
The sons of Madri were called Nakula and Sahadev. Rishis in the valley of Satashringa were the officiating priests for the naming ceremony, and later they were responsible for the early education of the young princes. They were almost the children of all the rishis in the valley. Years ago, when the curse had descended on Pandu and he had retired to the forest, the Vrishnis, the cousins and brothers of Kunti, were very happy. Now, when news reached them that Pandu was the father of 5 sons, they were immensely pleased. Vasudev, the brother of Kunti, sent costly gifts and clothes through his family priest, Kasyapa. This priest was asked to perform the rites necessary for young Kshatriya princes. He stayed on and performed their sacrifices. In the forest lived Shuka, the son of Sayati. There was no archer to equal him. He was performing penance in the valley of Shatringa. He volunteered to train the youngsters in the use of arms. Because of the excellent training given by the great sage, the young princes became proficient in the use of weapons. Bhima was good with the mace, Yudhisthira with the javelin, the twins with the sword. Arjun became the best archer. He could use both his hands with equal ease. Pleased with his skill, Shuka said that his disciple had become the equal of his master. In his pleasure, he made a gift of his bow to Arjun as a mark of his appreciation. Pandu spent 15 happy years with his sons. Time passed. One day, Kunti had gone with the sons to a neighboring ashram. Pandu was alone. It was a beautiful day. It was springtime. All the trees had dressed themselves with beautiful flowers. The air was laden with the perfume of these blossoms. The forest garden of Shatringa was that day a fitting stage for the act of love. In that place, made beautiful and dreamy by the magic touch of Vasanta, the Lord of Spring, the friend and helpmate of the God of Love, the king saw Madri. She was a very beautiful woman, her dark form draped in crimson silk. She stood before the king, enchanting him with her loveliness. Pandu was overcome with a desperate desire to take her. 18 years had passed without his having tasted the joys of a woman's embrace, and Madri was enchantingly beautiful. His desire was too strong. He forgot all about the curse, and Madri tried desperately to resist his advances. Kunti would have guarded him against this danger, but she was not there. Madri ran hither and thither like a frightened deer, but Pandu was too powerful. He caught her in his arms, and despite her words of warning and her remonstrances, he took her. And the next moment, he fell down dead. The cries of Madri reached the ears of Kunti. With the 5 young boys, she rushed to the spot, and Madri said,
"Something terrible has happened. Leave the children and come here alone."
Kunti saw her husband lying dead. She turned her entire wrath on the poor, unfortunate Madri, saying,
"How could you, knowing the curse, how could you allow this? Could you not have reminded him of it?"
Madri told her all that had happened, and Kunti realized that fate was too powerful. Her grief burned her frame. She fell down senseless on the ground. Madri took up the body of the dead king, dressed him in his kingly robes, and laid him on the bed. She made Kunti get up. Kunti looked at the face of Pandu. A beautiful smile lit the face of the dead king. Placing her face on his, Kunti gave way to her grief. By then, the rishis of the valley of Shatringa had assembled there. They looked on the scene with pity in their hearts. Yudhisthira and his brothers stood by, stunned by the calamity which had overtaken them. Yudhisthira lamented their fate with tears in his eyes. He said,
"We are now orphans. Fate's ways are indeed terrible. How can we, who are so young, live in this world of sin without your kind hands to guide us? From today, we are lost. We have no friends, no one to take care of us.
The children were standing round him, weeping tears of pain. The scene was pitiable. The sages took the children apart and tried to console them. Both Kunti and Madri wanted to ascend the funeral pyre with their husband, but the rishis said,
"You are both mothers. It's your duty to stay with your children and take care of them. They are now sunk in the depths of despair. It's not fitting that you, their dear mothers, should now leave them and make them orphans in the full sense of the word. We will take you both to the city of Hastinapur. There we are sure that the blind king Dhritarashtra will not be as fond of these children as he ought to be. It is your duty as mothers to guard these boys, or the future rulers of the world."
The words of the rishis found no response in the heart of Madri. She was bent on only one thing, her death with the husband who had to die because of her. She said,
"He wanted me. Before he was even able to satisfy himself, he died. I have got to go to him and satisfy him. I must die with him."
She was delirious with the pain in her heart. She looked at Kunti and said,
"My dear sister, you are the elder and the wiser of us two. I will never be able to guard the children the way that you can. My sons, born out of your kindness, are really your sons. You are great enough to be the mother of 5 sons. You are the only person who can guard them. You have your cousins of Rishnis to help you. You must help me to realize my dream. I cannot live in this world without my lord. I will ascend the funeral pyre with him. You must agree to make this sacrifice for me. You must live for the sake of these sons of yours. You will see them rule the entire world in the future. Life will have its compensations for you. I pray to you, grant me this wish."
And Kunti agreed. The rishis, too, thought that it was the right thing to do. Madri called the children to her side and spoke to them words full of love and pain. She said,
"Kunti is your mother. I have been just a nursemaid. You are all the sons of Kunti. You will be the 5 Kuntiyas. Yudhisthira will be the father, and you 4 will be his sons. Never displease him in any manner on any account. I am leaving you all in his hands. Yudhisthira, my son, you will be the lord of this earth. I will look on you from above and bless you."
Madri took leave of everyone. She fell at the feet of Kunti, and Kunti blessed her with the words,
"I grant your permission to follow our Lord. You will meet him in heaven and be with him forever. Your name will always be remembered with love and tears by the world of men. Farewell, my sister. You can go in peace."
Tears ran down her cheeks as she said this. Madri, with great joy suffusing her face, ascended the pyre. Yudhisthira, the eldest son, applied the sacred fire with streaming eyes. With the funeral ceremony over, the residents of Shatsringa conferred and decided on the future course of action. They said that the best thing to do would be to proceed to Hastinapur with Kunti and the 5 sons of Pandu. There they would leave the princess in the care of Bhishma and the king Dhritarashtra. It was the rightful home of the princess now that Pandu was dead. With eyes filled with tears, Kunti bade adieu to the forest Satasringa, where she had spent so many happy years with Pandu and Madri. It was all in the past now. A new chapter was to begin. No one knew what fate held in store for them in Hastinapur. The sages, with Kunti and the five sons of Pandu, set out for this beautiful city. The journey into the unknown had begun.
You've been listening to Stories from the Mahabharata, the celebrated history of Greater India. Compiled by the great sage Vyas many thousands of years ago, Mahabharata is written in the Sanskrit language in verse form and is here adapted for radio and brought to you by Radio Krishna. Tune in again for our next presentation of Stories from the Mahabharata.